Hi everybody, I'm Lights Camera Jackson with the LCJ Q&A, and joining me are Andrew Coates and Lou Hamalaj, the directors of the Oscar-nominated animated short film Borrowed Time. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having us. Yeah, thanks for having us.
You are welcome. First of all, congratulations, you're Oscar nominees. How does it feel?
It's pretty surreal. It's been a really crazy week. You wait your whole life watching the Oscars and dreaming of one day being up on stage, but it never feels like it's really, really attainable. And so this week's been the most exciting and terrifying week of our lives. It's hard to quantify, honestly. I don't know. How do you feel, Lou?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I think both Andrew and I have pushed out of our minds in terms of, like, it being remotely in the realm of possibility. So receiving that news on Tuesday morning was certainly a shock to our systems. There's a lot of jumping and crying, hugging. And then we realized, oh my God, it's in like a month. We've got to get moving. There's a lot of stuff to put in place. So it's really exciting, really crazy time. Yeah.
You guys got to get your tuxes and everything ready.
Yeah, it's definitely not a long, 4 weeks is not a long time to get a suit, unless you're renting. So it's a fun time. It's a fun time. A lot of hectic calls, a lot of favors. But everyone's really excited. So it's all like everyone's as excited as we are for us in a lot of ways. So yeah, it's been really great.
Fantastic. So Borrowed Time has played more than 50 festivals and it's won over 15 awards. As you've screened the movie in so many places and seen the reaction online as well, Andrew, I'll start with you. What has the response really meant to you?
Well, I mean, you make a movie, you spend all this time. Borrowed Time took us 5 years to make. So it's really exciting to get it in front of audiences and to go and watch it in front of an audience in a theater. I mean, there's nothing better, right? It's why we make movies, to try to connect with people. So it's been, such a pleasure to experience it through audiences and kind of see it through their eyes. Because you get a little tunnel visions, you know, working on your own and with a team that's seen it over and over. And you kind of forget how it affects people and what you've created in a lot of ways, because you become kind of you're too objective about it at that point. You don't have like this new fresh view of it, so it's really exciting to see it with audiences. It's really exciting to go to the festivals and meet with people and hear their responses and talk with them and answer questions. It's been amazing. Just the year flew by.
Wow. And you guys are both graduates of the NYU Tisch School of the Arts, but in different years. Andrew, you were in 05, and Lou, you were in 08. You did both end up at Pixar around the same time, so is that how you guys met each other?
Well, yeah, so Andrew and I certainly met within the animation hall of the Tisch building way back when. The group of students that choose to focus within animation is fairly small, all things considered. It's not its own major, it's within the film department. So like minds tend to gravitate towards one another in those types of circumstances. And even though we were 3 years apart, we kind of identified in each other that we had similar sensibilities and we liked each other's work. And what naturally came out of that was we ended up helping each other out on our student shorts, which is, perhaps a little bit unusual at NYU, because usually people work on their own films in solo, as opposed to other studios or other schools that kind of structure around like a studio format. But that definitely kind of lit something up for us, and we knew that we wanted to actually collaborate on something for real. When we were established and out of school.
Yeah. It was always it was a natural progression for us, because we had a lot of things in common, and we could talk about any issues, and we had like a natural sort of respect for each other that you don't have with everyone. So it's been it's been an awesome, you know, 5 years fostering that and kind of growing together as filmmakers and respecting each other's opinions and kind of like, you know, sharpening each other. It's been awesome.
So this is not a Pixar short, but in the midst of these 5 years, you guys have been a part of making Pixar movies, and I read you sort of did this on the side at Pixar?
Yes. So it's not affiliated with Pixar. It's not a Pixar film in any respect, but we did make it here, and it was on our nights and weekends. We have a program for sort of continuing education within the studio called Pixar University, and within that there's a program called the Co-op, where people tend to make live-action films. We were the first to actually, you know, get through a whole production of CG animation because you have to go through the pipeline, and it's a very difficult technical achievement to get to because there's no literal support. You have to kind of figure it out on your own and get the right people to help you on their time. So we're very grateful that we had the opportunity to do it. But yeah, it was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. That went into those 5 years.
My gosh. And the story of Borrowed Time really isn't one that could be done under the Pixar name or any mainstream animation studio because of the subject matter. Was your initial goal to make something much more mature than what you'd worked on previously?
Yeah, that was in large part kind of what we set out to do. You know, when you have these sort of passion projects that you're doing after hours, if you're working in the same medium that you're working in all day, you need to find some way to mix it up for yourself and keep it exciting and fresh. And for us, that meant challenging ourselves to tell a story that was, you know, hopefully emotionally compelling to our audience and go in a place that people weren't necessarily expecting. There's, you know, an unfortunate misconception we feel in the popular culture in America that animation is really only relegated for children's films or family films. Mm. But, you know, you look at films coming out of France or Japan or, you know, anywhere else around the world, even, you know, some independent films here in the States, people take more risks and go with a bit more of a mature palette, or not necessarily mature, but, you know, they vary what their themes are quite a bit more. So we wanted to just kind of participate in that a bit and as much as we could enter that conversation, but also wrap it within something that the popular culture is used to seeing. You know, it doesn't need to be edgy in the art style to necessarily have something that speaks to a different demographic, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
It's also great to have a genre, like to take a genre in itself, like a Western, and challenge not only the genre itself, but what better way to show that animation can be anything and it's not a genre in itself than to pick like the quintessential American genre and try to do something different with it and kind of like expose the flaw in sort of the logic of animation being for kids in like two different directions. But it was always a goal for us to keep pushing on that, and you know that's what's exciting about animation. It's you can tell any story with it. We barely scratched the surface, and that's really exciting to think of the prospects of the future with a lot more platforms for people to put their work in on, like Netflix and Amazon, and all these different digital online platforms, hopefully. As the price goes down on how much it costs to make films, we'll get to see more and more diverse films in the future.
Mm. Yeah, Borrowed Time is about a sheriff who returns to the place where something tragic occurred many years earlier. What classic Westerns in the TV or in the movies did you use as inspiration for the story?
Oh, we certainly looked at all of Sergio Leone's Man with No Name trilogy, films like 3:10 to Yuma, Butch Cassidy.
Yeah, I mean, we looked at a lot of the spaghetti Western classics that we kind of grew up watching, and then also newer films and, you know, like 3:10 to Yuma, Unforgiven, There Will Be Blood, you know, there's a lot of really great breadth in the Westerns, and there's a lot of great iconography in Westerns to play with. And, you know, coming from such a visual medium as animation, it was really exciting to kind of play with those, you know, shot compositions and, you know, different editing techniques and just trying to find, like, the energy and, like, the feel of the Western genre and kind of exploit that a little with, you know, visually how we told our story.
There is something, too, that comes with taking something that is that immediately recognizable in what that iconography that Andrew is speaking to kind of portrays, right? You can within two shots know, oh, I'm in a Western, and I have a certain expectation that I bring to watching a Western. And that is hugely liberating as a filmmaker when you're trying to tell a short story, because you don't have to necessarily establish as much of the world. You can get into the character a little bit sooner. Mm-hmm. And for us, that meant that we could play with those expectations and take things like the stoic cowboy and, you know, show a cowboy that's broken, show something that's different in that in that context.
Yeah, very seldom do you see a cowboy cry. So that was something that was exciting for us to get a cowboy to that place and like humanize them, because they generally are, I mean, most of the sort of spaghetti Westerns are kind of revenge stories, and they're, you know, they're badass, you know, cowboys that, you know, have like honor but are also flawed characters, but they don't show their emotions. They take action.
Yeah, so that was a fun challenge.
Yeah.
Fit in like 6.5 minutes.
Yeah. That was an easy thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think what... Yeah, I loved the short, by the way. It really brought me to tears as I was watching it. You guys make something that's so serious with such a power punch of an emotional core, and you do it in 6 minutes, and it really is fantastic, guys. I give you a ton of credit on it.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate hearing that.
You're welcome. Have you guys ever had sort of a second chance experience, as our sheriff sees in the short? Have you ever had that when it comes to anything in your careers?
I mean, nothing. I didn't shoot my dad, so not exactly the same. But I think we all have things that we regret in our lives, and experiences or things you left unsaid with someone that might not be here anymore. I lost an aunt and an uncle while we were making the film. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just looking back at the memories that I have with them and the objects that my memories are attached to with them, it was just really powerful to kind of almost have that person back with you when you see those objects again. So it's a sort of story that we're realizing. I mean, when we did it, we were obviously trying to make something that people can relate to, but we're seeing that everyone has these stories, and watching the film brings those to light to them, especially more introspective audience members. They'll literally put themselves in his place and be able to empathize with what it is to feel regret for something, but to also, you know, remember the good things about, you know, that surround what that regret means.
Yeah. And just that the power of imbuing a physical object with your your memory of somebody, what that can be for people if they've recovered some token that was long lost or something like that. You know, it's been really interesting to see echoes of that in people's responses to us. Anybody who writes to us, private messages us or something like that. It's incredible to see the sort of impact that can have on people.
Yeah, very much.
Mm. And you guys were talking about the classic movies that inspired you for this. I also feel like the physical setting and the scenery are really characters in Borrowed Time as well. Did you study sunsets and stormy skies just to get that animation right?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of paintings. We did all those skies. There was a lot of conversations about the sunset at the end and which sunset and what colors we'd use, how we were going to use storm rolling in and the light and how that was going to affect the mood and how we were going to be building the sort of, I mean, and the sky is 50% of the composition in most of our shots. And it was something that we hadn't really planned for in the beginning and didn't realize that basically we needed the skies painted before we could even light shots because that's the source of light in the scene.
Right.
These are the sort of things that we just kind of didn't know going in. And also that, of course, doing drastic changes in skies and lighting over a few shots is really, really difficult and is not even done in features very often. Yeah. And we have, like, four of them in the short.
Yeah, four major transitions. But that really came to light. I mean, we did go on a few research trips out to, say, Arizona and that sort of thing. Took a lot of photo reference, but our lighting DP, Luke Martorelli, was really pushing on us to look for something that had like an uncanny beauty to it, right? Not your typical expectation of what an Arizona landscape might look like in terms of the way that the light plays. And a lot of that work in setting up the skies was done by my fiance Nancy, who works tirelessly with him and us to really get it to a place where we have that big sky country feel, and you kind of went off into the vista. That sunset, man, that was tricky because we didn't want it to turn into like a Lisa Frank trapper keeper, like all the colors of the sunset and be subdued but still beautiful.
It was really hard. That Nancy took probably five stabs of it. I think we were happy with it, four versions before she was. But it always had the right feeling. And then she's a really, really amazing artist.
This year, with the Academy Awards, two of the Best Supporting Actor nominees played sheriffs in their movies. You have Jeff Bridges, Hell or High Water, Michael Shannon, Nocturnal Animals. I'm sure you guys really want to meet them on Oscar night.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we're beyond excited for all the prospects of all the people we can meet. It's pretty crazy. We have a luncheon next week with all the nominees, a good opportunity to sit down and... Well, it's random. I don't know who we're going to be sitting next to, and we're not going to be sitting next to each other.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun.
Yep.
/ terrifying.
I'm going to have to... Shell.
Yeah, you're going to have to... Yeah. I'm not going to be there.
Yeah. You're not going to be there to help me.
I tend to talk a lot. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but... it's going to be exciting. And Jeff Bridges, I will give that man a hug. My beautiful, beautiful bearded face.
So are you guys going to collaborate on another short in the future?
Absolutely not. I hate him. we've got some ideas that we're brewing and playing around with. It's been pretty tough, though, I got to say, with the festival circuit. It's been a lot of time and a lot of work between us and mostly our producer, Amanda. But a lot of traveling and still have our full-time jobs that we're maintaining. And it's been difficult, but we're definitely going to make some more films together. We loved making Borrowed Time. It was one of the best experiences of our lives, if not the, apart from getting married to my wife.
Fantastic. Well, guys, Andrew and Lou, thank you so much for joining me today, and best of luck at the Academy Awards. You can see Borrowed Time as part of the Oscar-nominated animated short films presentation, which debuts in select theaters on February 10th, and we'll see if it takes home the gold statue at the Oscars on February 26th. I'm Lates Camera Jackson with the LCJ Q&A.